Come and hear abortion survivor Melissa Odin, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life, and Blaze TV and radio host Steve Dace at the 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Lutherans for Life National Conferences provide valuable information and encouragement to you, your congregation, and your community. The 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Learn more at lutheransforlife.org/conference.
It sounds innocuous. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists sounds neutral. Sounds like a good organization of obstetricians and gynecologists who just want the best for women. And because they're obstetricians and gynecologists, their children as well. If that's what you think, you're wrong. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about misinformation on maternal medical care coming from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Donna Harrison joins us. She's a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. She's executive director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and she is associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Harrison, welcome back.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
What is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists?
Well, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is a very large group of OBGYNs across the country. And in fact, our organization, the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, was one of the largest special groups within ACOG, and I'll call it ACOG because it's easier to say, within ACOG for 40 years until 2013, at which time ACOG completely dissolved the title of special interest groups. But ACOG was formed to try to give a voice for OBGYNs to speak to public policy matters. But in about the 1960s, ACOG went from being pro-life to being pro-abortion. And they've continued to become more and more and more aggressively pro-abortion, which is why our organization, the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, formed within ACOG to maintain some kind of a pro-life voice. Well, since 2013, and they dissolved that title, ACOG has been even more aggressively pro-abortion, to the point where they have filed 4 abortion cases in every Supreme Court case, including Roe versus Wade. So we also filed a separate brief in Roe versus Wade saying basically what the Dobbs decision ultimately ended up saying, that there's another human being in this matter, and that as OBGYNs, we have 2 patients. So we have been the professional second opinion to ACOG since 1973, 50 years.
Does ACOG survey its members about their positions and opinions, or does it just issue its own statements through these court filings?
Well, ACOG has a lot of things that it does, and a lot of things that it does very well. When they talk about things dealing with cancer, or for instance, with stress incontinence or other issues that we have in OBGYN, they do very well, and there isn't a political motive. But in abortion, they have not surveyed their members, and they don't actually represent their members. In fact, they're very proud of not representing their members, because way back when they decided to become pro-abortion, they even wrote about it in their history called ACOG's Evolution of Abortion Policy. You can Google it on the internet. And they're very proud of the fact that the abortion policy was top-down. It was not discussed with membership, and it was just simply implemented because they knew that OBGYNs know they have 2 patients. And there's been 3 studies, national studies, that have looked at OBGYNs and abortion over the last decade. And what they found is somewhere between 75 and 93% of OBGYNs do not do abortions in their private practice. And that's not because they can't. Every OBGYN knows how to empty a uterus at any gestational age. That's what we go through training for. The reason that OBGYNs don't do elective abortion is because they know that there's no medical reason for an elective abortion and that it kills one of their patients. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't separate a mom and her preborn child if the mom's life is truly in danger. Yes, We all separate moms and their preborn children, but we do that in a way that respects the dignity of that preborn child's body. And if at all possible, we try to separate the mom and the baby in a way that allows the mom to hold her baby and to be a mom and to say goodbye. As contrast to that, an elective abortion, the purpose of that is to produce a dead baby, is to guarantee that that baby doesn't live. And the reason I can say that is if you think about what happens when an abortion is done at, say, 30 weeks, when the babies can live outside, the abortionist does the abortion and the baby lives. Did the separation fail to happen? No, the separation happened. What failed to happen is the baby failed to die. That's because the product of an elective abortion is a dead baby. And the Royal College of OB-GYN, who is the UK counterpart to ACOG, makes no bones about it, that an elective abortion is a procedure done with the intent to produce a dead baby.
Let's deal with some of the myths that are being put forth, not only by organizations like ACOG, but also the media in general. The first being that restrictions on abortions are somehow an intrusion on the relationship between doctor and patient.
Well, first of all, the abortion industry is speaking out of both sides of its mouth. So while they talk about the doctor-patient relationship, most patients don't have a relationship with their abortionist because most abortionists just do abortion. So there is not a doctor-patient relationship. And the abortionist, at least when it comes to medical abortion, chemical abortion with Mifeprex, most of the time, the woman who has complications, those aren't handled by the abortionist. They're handled by the emergency room. So it's not true that there actually even exists a doctor-patient relationship most of the time. But on the other hand, the abortion industry is saying, oh, well, you can just take these drugs and you don't even need a doctor to find out how far along you are or whether or not you have Rh-negative blood or whether or not the baby's in your tube. Now, all of those things are severe problems. If you are 13 weeks pregnant or more, then you have a 30% chance, one out of three, that you're going to end up in the ER with severe hemorrhage. Now, that's a piece of information that every woman should know before they're given that drug. But how is she going to know that unless she has an ultrasound? And how is she going to get an ultrasound unless she interacts with some medical professional before taking the abortion drugs? But the abortion industry is saying, oh, no, you don't need anything. You don't need to know if the baby's in the womb or in the tube. That's horribly problematic because Mifeprex, the chemical abortion drug regimen, does not treat ectopic pregnancies. So I, with a team of other people, have reviewed the complications that were submitted to the FDA, which, by the way, only represent about 1.5% of the actual complications that happen. So we reviewed that, and there are women who have died because they had pain and bleeding, and they called, and they were told, oh, this is normal with a chemical abortion. Just, you know, lay down and take a Tylenol. And they bled to death because the symptoms of a rupturing ectopic pregnancy, pain and bleeding, are exactly the same symptoms as the Mifeprex abortion. So it's problematic if a woman doesn't know where her baby is before she takes these drugs, and if she doesn't know how far along she is, so she knows her risks. But what's even worse is the abortion industry is saying these drugs can be had by anybody. So who's to say whether or not that girl's being abused? And these drugs are available online. So the abortion industry is speaking out of both sides of its mouth when it wants to say there's a doctor-patient relationship on one hand when they want to argue for the legitimacy of abortion, and there's no need for a doctor-patient relationship when they want to argue for over-the-counter access for Mifeprex.
Another myth is that maternal mortality will increase as a result of the Supreme Court's overruling of Roe. What's your response?
Well, if you look at countries that where abortion has been made illegal, so for an example, there's excellent data out of the country of Chile, who has very high-quality maternal mortality data. And they looked at what happened with abortion mortality and with maternal mortality after abortion was made illegal, and it fell. Maternal mortality fell and abortion mortality fell. Why? Because there were fewer abortions, so there were fewer women dying from the abortion, And the maternal mortality fell because there were fewer abortions and more women were able to access prenatal care and to be cared for, because an abortion is actually more dangerous than giving birth. And not only in the short term, but in the long term. If you look at countries like Finland, where Finland owns the medical record, women are much more likely to die after they have an abortion, within the year after they have an abortion, than they are if within the year after they give birth. So it's just simply not true. And part of the problem we have with being able to show that in this country, which I'm sure we will show, part of the problem we're having is that the U.S. doesn't have any data, any reliable data, on complications after abortion. It's never been collected, and it's been fought tooth and nail by ACOG, because ACOG only wants the government to collect data on women that die after childbearing. They don't want the government to collect data on women that die after an abortion. And it's this purposeful hiding of what they know. They know that abortion is more dangerous than childbirth. And we are hopeful that in this new era, we'll get some transparency in data.
Talk more about the long-term impact on women's reproductive health when it comes to abortion.
So we know from studies, like actually 160 plus studies over the last 60 years, that women who have abortion, surgical abortion, are at an increased risk of being unable to carry a baby to term afterward. That's what we call preterm birth. And it's actually a very much increased risk of having that edge of life preterm birth, 22 to 26 weeks. Why? Because an abortion damages both the lining of the womb and damages the cervix, which is the part of the womb that holds the baby in. And with those two things damaged, those are what lead to preterm birth. So a colleague of mine just had a patient who had a couple abortions and then went on to have six miscarriages in the second trimester because her womb wouldn't hold it. Can you imagine how devastating that is? I had a patient as well who had a couple abortions when she was a teenager and then went on to be unable to carry any children to the point where they could live outside the womb. It's horribly devastating, and women are not being given this information, and they should. There's 160 plus studies over six decades that have shown this. So it's not even an issue. So some people say, oh, well, the drug-induced abortion is much better. Well, it turns out that we don't know whether it's much better, because drug-induced abortion also can interfere with the immune system in the woman's womb. And it's this chronic inflammation that's part of the stimulus for preterm birth. So the data is out, but what we do know is that if a woman has a chemical abortion and then she has to have it surgically completed because of massive hemorrhage or tissue left inside, she is at much higher risk of having preterm birth problems in future pregnancies.
What about the negative impact on women's mental health?
And that is a significant and tragic complication that women are also not told about. One of the excuses in the past was, well, this woman has to have an abortion because she's sad or depressed. Well, it turns out that women, if you take even the subset of unwanted, unplanned pregnancies, and you compare women who abort those unwanted, unplanned pregnancies with women who give birth, the women who abort are at increased risk of suicide, drug abuse, and hospitalizable depression. And that data did not come from a pro-life researcher. That data came from a pro-choice researcher who said at the end, I'm pro-choice, but the truth is the truth, and women should know it. There is actually not a mental health indication for abortion because it doesn't solve a mental health problem. Depression and suicide are not treated by abortion. Abortion is not a mental health treatment. And that's something that women really do need to know, especially when they're in that deer in the headlights crisis moment, when what am I going to do? I can't think straight. And they're being sold a bill of goods that the abortion is somehow going to solve the problem, when after they get through that immediate crisis and they think back, oh my goodness, what did I do? And how did I affect my body from here on out? The story's a lot different when you look at women immediately after the abortion versus when you look at them 5 or 10 years later.
So return to the subject of both miscarriage and ectopic pregnancy. It had been widely reported on the heels of the Dobbs decision that women in states where abortion was going to be restricted were not going to be able to get treated at all for either of those tragic conditions.
You know, this is probably one of the most surprising things to all the docs in APLOG, this kind of messaging, because it's truly insane. When you know that 85 to 93% of OB-GYNs in general practice don't do abortion, and you know that for the last 50 years we've been giving excellent OB-GYN care, and you know that 20% of the healthcare in this country is done by Catholic hospitals who don't do abortion, who always treat miscarriages and ectopics, where would that kind of messaging come from? It's insane. It's based on no reality. I have reviewed the laws in all the states. Every single state allows for the treatment of ectopic pregnancy and miscarriage. Every single one of them. And so where this is coming from is just, it boggles the imagination, because it's not coming from any kind of evidence or fact or review of the laws. It's purely a scare tactic. And it's a scare tactic which is having its toll on women's health, because now they're afraid. So instead of seeking care early, they're afraid to seek care because they think they're not going to get care. They think they're going to be denied. That's crazy. I mean, it's literally insane. Every woman who needs miscarriage care is going to get it. And every woman who needs ectopic care that seeks it from a hospital is going to get it. So I just would encourage listeners to ignore that kind of totally irrational media speak, because it simply has no basis in fact.
The big one. Abortion is essential health care.
Well, this is also another surprising topic, because elective abortion is by definition a separation of the mom and the baby for the purpose of producing a dead baby which has no medical indication. So if there's no medical indication, it's not health care. Abortion, elective abortion, doesn't treat any disease. Pregnancy is not a disease. It's a normal physiological process. So you're intervening to separate a mom and a baby for the explicit purpose of producing a dead baby for social reasons. This is not health care. Now, the abortion proponents may want to hide behind a veneer that, oh, yes, well, because a scalpel is used or it's done in a clinic, that makes it health care. Well, listen, if I were to take a scalpel and slice open your chest, and I were to do that in order to treat a problem with your heart, that's medical care. But if I were to take a scalpel and slice open your chest for the purpose of killing you, it's the same scalpel, it's the same incision. The purpose is different, and that is not medical care. When you apply medical procedures in order for the outcome to be the death of a human being, that is not medical care.
So in a nutshell here with about a minute, Dr. Harrison, a lot of people are swayed by the fact that an organization like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists will throw in with some of these myths and misinformation. What should they basically know about that organization now?
Well, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is rabidly pro-abortion, and they make no bones about it. If you Google ACOG and abortion, you will see. ACOG has said, we will advocate for abortion access. We will advocate for abortion in any circumstance. They fought parental consent. They fight informed consent. So on the issue of abortion, maybe not on other things, but on the issue of abortion, ACOG is rabidly pro-abortion, and they're very proud of it.
Dr. Donna Harrison is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. She is executive director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists and associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Folks, the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists has produced a great pamphlet called Myth Versus Fact, Correcting Misinformation on Maternal Medical Care. You can download it for free at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Harrison, thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Adam Francisco joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to answer a question. Is secularism, which, well, until maybe the last decade, might have been considered a religiously neutral position, is it, in fact, still secular? We'll answer that question and many others next. When Jesus says that he is the way, the truth, and the life, does he mean the only way, truth, and life? I answer that question in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In our Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Christopher Neuendorf writes about his journey into Lutheranism from Greek Orthodoxy. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you know a child with autism, dyslexia, ADHD, or Down syndrome? Do you have a student who needs an effective yet more gently paced education? We invite you to visit simplyclassical.com for a complete academic curriculum rooted in the truth of God's Word, the mercy of forgiveness, and the peace of Christ. From Memoria Press, simplyclassical.com. Promo code LPR22.
With the oldest deaconess program of the LCMS, Concordia University Chicago has fully certified young women for the deaconess vocation for more than 40 years. I'm Deaconess Kristen Wasilak, Program Director for Deaconess Studies. Help us identify the next generation of servants to care for souls, engage our communities in mercy, and teach God's Word. Learn more about Concordia Chicago's deaconess program today at cuchicago.edu, cuchicago.edu.